Hey, Boo.
We are continuing chapter 14 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. If you remember, Harry was dozing off here to thinking perhaps inappropriate thoughts about Ron's sister. Harry awoke the next morning feeling slightly dazed and confused by a series of dreams in which Ron had chased him with a beater's bat, but by midday he would have happily exchanged the dream Ron for the real one, who was not only cold-shouldering Ginny and Dean, but also treating a hurt and bewildered Hermione with an icy, sneering indifference. What was more, Ron seemed to have become overnight as touchy and ready to lash out as the average blast-ended Scroope. Harry spent the day attempting to keep the peace between Ron and Hermione with no success. Finally, Hermione departed for bed in high dudgeon, and Ron stalked off to the boys' dormitory after swearing angrily at several frightened first-years for looking at him. To Harry's dismay, Ron's new aggression did not wear off over the next few days. Worse still, it coincided with an even deeper dip in his keeping skills, which made him still more aggressive so that during the final Quidditch practice before Saturday's match, he failed to save every single goal the chasers aimed at him, but bellowed at everybody so much that he reduced Demelza Robbins to tears. "You shut up and leave her alone," shouted Peeks, who was about two-thirds Ron's height, though admittedly carrying a heavy bat. "Enough," bellowed Harry, who had seen Ginny glowering in Ron's direction, and remembering her reputation as an accomplished caster of bat bogey hex, soared over to intervene before things got out of hand. "Peeks, go and pack up the bludgers. Demelza, pull yourself together. You played really well today. Ron," he waited until the rest of the team were out of earshot before saying it, "you're my best mate, but carry on treating the rest of the team like this and I'm going to kick you off the team." He really thought for a moment that Ron might hit him, but then something much worse happened. Ron seemed to sag on his broom. All the fight went out of him and he said, "I resign. I'm pathetic." "You're not pathetic and you're not resigning," said Harry fiercely, seizing Ron by the front of his robes. "You can save anything when you're on form. It's a mental problem you've got." "You calling me mental?" "Yeah, maybe I am." They glared at each other for a moment, and then Ron shook his head wearily. "I know you haven't got time to find another keeper, so I'll play tomorrow. But if we lose, and we will, I'm taking myself off the team." Nothing, Harry said, made any difference. He tried boosting Ron's confidence all through dinner, but Ron was too busy being grumpy and surly with Hermione to notice. Harry persisted in the common room that evening, but his assertion that the whole team would be devastated if Ron left was somewhat undermined by the fact that the rest of the team was sitting in a huddle in the distant corner, clearly muttering about Ron and casting him nasty looks. Finally, Harry tried getting angry again in the hopes of provoking Ron into a defiant and hopefully goal-saving attitude, but this strategy did not appear to work any better than encouragement. Ron went to bed as dejected and hopeless as ever. Harry lay awake for a very long time in the dark. He did not want to lose the upcoming match. Not only was it his first as captain, but he was determined to beat Draco Malfoy at Quidditch, even if he could not yet prove his suspicions about him. Yet if Ron played as he had done in the last few practices, their chances of winning were very slim. If only there was something he could do to make Ron pull himself together, make him play at the top of his form, something that would ensure that Ron had a really good day. And the answer came to Harry in one sudden, glorious stroke of inspiration. Breakfast was the usual excitable affair next morning. The Slytherins hissed and booed loudly as every member of the Gryffindor team entered the Great Hall. Harry glanced at the ceiling and saw a clear, pale blue sky, a good omen. The Gryffindor table, a solid mass of red and gold, cheered as Harry and Ron approached. Harry grinned and waved. Ron grimaced weakly and shook his head. "Cheer up, Ron," called Lavender. "I know you'll be brilliant." Ron ignored her. "Tea?" Harry asked him. "Coffee? Pumpkin juice?" "Anything," said Ron glumly, taking a moody bite of toast. A few minutes later, Hermione, who had become so tired of Ron's recent behavior that she had not come to breakfast with them, paused on her way up to the table. How are you feeling? She asked tentatively, her eyes on the back of Ron's head. Fine, said Harry, who was concentrating on handing Ron a glass of pumpkin juice. There you go, Ron, drink up. Ron had just raised the glass to his lips when Hermione spoke sharply. Don't drink that, Ron. Both Harry and Ron looked up at her. Why not? Said Ron. Hermione was now staring at Harry as though she could not believe her eyes. You just put something in that drink. Excuse me, said Harry. You heard me, I saw you. You just tipped something into Ron's drink. You've got the bottle in your hand right now. I don't know what you're talking about, said Harry, stowing the little bottle hastily into his pocket. Ron, I warn you, don't drink it, Hermione said, alarmed, but Ron picked up the glass, drained it in one gulp, and said, Stop bossing me around, Hermione. She looked scandalized. Bending so low that only Harry could hear her, she hissed. You should be expelled for that. I'd never have believed it of you, Harry. Hark who's talking, he whispered back. Confounded anyone lately? Then she stormed up the table away from them. Harry watched her go without regret. Hermione had never really understood what a serious business Quidditch was. He then looked around at Ron, who was smacking his lips. Nearly time, said Harry blithely. The frosty grass crunched underfoot as they strode down to the stadium. Pretty lucky the weather's this good, eh? Harry asked Ron. Yeah, said Ron, who was looking pale and sick. Ginny and Demelza were already wearing their Quidditch robes and waiting in the changing rooms. Conditions look ideal, said Ginny, ignoring Ron. And guess what? That Slytherin chaser, Vaisley, he took a bludger in the head yesterday during their practice, and he's too sore to play. And even better than that, Malfoy's gone off sick, too. What? Said Harry, wheeling around to stare at her. He's ill? What's wrong with him? No idea, but it's great for us, said Ginny brightly. They're playing Harper instead. He's in my ear, and he's an idiot. Harry smiled back vaguely as he pulled on his scarlet robes. His mind was far from Quidditch. Malfoy had once before claimed he could not play due to an injury, but on that occasion he had made sure the whole match was rescheduled for a time that suited the Slytherins better. Why was he now happy to let a substitute go on? Was he really ill, or was he faking? Fishy, isn't it? He said in an undertone to Ron. Malfoy not playing? Lucky, I call it, said Ron, looking slightly more animated. And Vasey off them, too? He's their best scorer. I didn't fancy. Hey, he said suddenly, freezing halfway through, pulling on his keeper's gloves and staring at Harry. What? Ron had dropped his voice. He looked both scared and excited. My drink, my pumpkin juice. You didn't. Harry raised his eyebrows. But he said nothing except, We'll be starting in about 5 minutes. You better get your boots on. They walked out onto the pitch to tumultuous roars and boos. One end of the stadium was solid red and gold, the other a sea of silver and green. Many Hufflepuffs and Ravenclaws had taken sides, too. Amidst all the yelling and clapping, Harry could distinctly hear the roar of Luna Lovegood's famous lion-topped hat. Harry stepped up to Madame Hooch, the referee, who was standing ready to release the balls from the crates. Captains, shake hands, she said, and Harry had his hand crushed by the new Slytherin captain, Urquhart. Mount your brooms, on the whistle, 3, 2, 1. The whistle sounded. Harry and the others kicked off hard from the frozen ground, and they were away. Harry soared around the perimeter of the grounds, looking for the snitch and keeping one eye on Harper, who was zigzagging far below them. Then, a voice that was jarringly different to the usual commentators started up. Well, there you go, and I think we're all surprised to see the team that Potter's put together this year. Many thought, given Ronald Weasley's patchy performance as keeper last year, that he might be off the team, but of course a close personal friendship with the captain does help. Those words were greeted with jeers and applause from the Slytherin end of the pitch. Harry craned around on his broom to look at the commentator's podium. A tall, skinny blonde boy with an upturned nose was standing there, talking into the magical megaphone that had once been Lee Jordan's. Harry recognized Zacharias Smith, a Hufflepuff player whom he heartily disliked. Oh, and here comes Slytherin's first attempt on goal. It's Urquhart streaking down the pitch, and... Harry's stomach turned over. And Weasley saves it. Well, he's bound to get lucky sometimes, I suppose. That's right, Smith, he is, muttered Harry, grinning to himself, as he dived among the chasers with his eyes and searching for all round for some hint of the elusive snitch. With half an hour of the game gone, Gryffindor were leading 60-0, Ron having made some truly spectacular saves, some by the very tips of his gloves, and Ginny having scored 4 of Gryffindor's 6 goals. This effectively stopped Zacharias wondering loudly whether the two Weasleys were only there because Harry liked them, and he started picking on Peeks and Coot instead. Of course, Coot isn't really the usual build for a beater, said Zacharias loftily. They've generally got a bit more muscle. Hit a bludger at him, Harry called to Coot as he zoomed past, but Coot, grinning broadly, chose to aim the next bludger at Harper instead, who was just passing Harry in the opposite direction. Harry was pleased to hear a dull thunk that meant the bludger had found its mark. It seemed as though Gryffindor could do no wrong. Again and again they scored, and again at the other end of the pitch Ron saved goals with apparent ease. He was actually smiling now, and when the crowd greeted a particularly good save with the rousing chorus of the old favorite, Weasley is our king, he pretended to conduct them from on high. Thinks he's set something special today, doesn't he? Said a snide voice, and Harry was nearly knocked off his broom, as Harper collided with him hard and deliberately. You're a blood traitor, pal. Madame Hooch's back was turned, and though Gryffindors below shouted in anger, by the time she looked around, Harper had already sped off. His shoulder aching, Harry raced after him, determined to ram him back. And I think Harper of Slytherin seen the snitch, said Zacharias Smith through his megaphone. Yes, he's certainly seen something Potter hasn't. Smith really was an idiot, though Harry, hadn't he noticed them collide? Thought Harry, hadn't he noticed them collide? But the next moment his stomach seemed to drop out of the sky. Smith was right and Harry was wrong. Harper had not sped upward at random. He had spotted what Harry had not. The snitch was speeding along high above them, glinting brightly against the clear blue sky. Harry accelerated. The wind was whistling in his ears so that it drowned all sound of Smith's commentary over the crowd, but Harper was still ahead of him, and Gryffindor was only 100 points up. If Harper got there first, Gryffindor had lost. And now Harper was feet from it, his hands outstretched. "Oi, Harper!" yelled Harry in desperation. "How much did Malfoy pay you to come on instead of him?" He did not know what made him say it, but Harper did a double take. He fumbled the snitch, let it slip through his fingers, and shot right past it. Harry made a great swipe for it, for the tiny, fluttering ball, and caught it. "Yes!" Harry yelled. Wheeling around, he hurled back toward the ground, the snitch held high in his hand. As the crowd realized what had happened, a great shout went up that almost drowned the sound of the whistle that signaled the end of the game. "Ginny, where are you going?" yelled Harry, who found himself trapped in the midst of a mass mid-air hug with the rest of the team, but Ginny sped right past them until, with an almighty crash, she collided with the commentator's podium. As the crowd shrieked and laughed, the Gryffindor team landed beside the wreckage of wood under which Zacharias was feebly stirring. Harry heard Ginny saying blithely to an irate Professor McGonagall, "Forgot to break, Professor, sorry." Laughing, Harry broke free of the rest of the team and hugged Ginny, but let go very quickly. Avoiding her gaze, he clapped a cheering Ron on the back instead as, all enmity forgotten, the Gryffindor team left the pitch arm in arm, punching the air and waving to their supporters. The atmosphere in the changing room was jubilant. "Party up in the common room, Seamus." "Party up in the common room," Seamus said, yelled Dean exuberantly. "Come on, Ginny, Demelza." Ron and Harry were the last two in the changing room. They were just about to leave when Hermione entered. She was twisting her Gryffindor scarf in her hands, and she looked upset but determined. "I want a word with you, Harry," she took a deep breath. "You shouldn't have done it. You heard Slughorn, it's illegal." "What are you going to do, turn us in?" demanded Ron. "What are you two talking about?" asked Harry, turning away to hang up his robe so that neither of them would see him grinning. "You know perfectly well what we're talking about," said Hermione shrilly. "You spiked Ron's juice with a lucky potion at breakfast. Felix Felicis." "No, I didn't," said Harry, turning back to face them. "Yes, you did, Harry, and that's why everything went right. There were Slytherin players missing, and Ron saved everything." "I didn't put it in," Harry said, grinning broadly. He slipped his hand inside his jacket pocket and drew out the tiny bottle that Hermione had seen in his hand that morning. It was full of golden potion, and the cork was still tightly sealed with wax. "I wanted Ron to think I'd done it, so I'd faked it when he knew you were looking." He looked at Ron. "You saved everything because you felt you were lucky. You did it all yourself." He pocketed the potion again. "There really wasn't anything in my pumpkin juice?" said Ron, astounded. "But the weather's good, and Vasey couldn't play. I honestly haven't been given the lucky potion." Harry shook his head. Ron gaped at him for a moment, and then he rounded on Hermione, imitating her voice. "You added Felix Felicis to Ron's juice this morning. That's why he saved everything. See, I can save goals without help, Hermione." "I never said you couldn't, Ron. You thought you'd been given it, too." But Ron had already strode past her out the door with his broomstick over his shoulder. Said Harry into the sudden silence. He had not expected his plan to backfire like this. Shall we go up to the party, then?" "You go," said Hermione, blinking back tears. "I'm sick of Ron at the moment. I don't know what I'm supposed to have done." And she stormed out of the changing room. Harry walked slowly back up the grounds, toward the castle, through the crowd, many of whom shouted congratulations at him, but he felt a great sense of letdown. He had been sure that if Ron had won the match, he and Hermione would be friends again immediately. He did not see how he could possibly explain to Hermione what she had done to offend Ron was kiss Victor Krum, not when the offense had occurred so long ago. Harry could not see Hermione at the Gryffindor celebration party, which was in full swing when he arrived. Renewed cheers and clapping greeted his appearance, and he was soon surrounded by a mob of people congratulating him. What with trying to shake off the Creevy brothers, who wanted a blow-by-blow analysis, and a large match of girls that encircled him, laughing at his least amusing comments and batting their eyelids, it was some time before he could try to find Ron. At last, he extricated himself from Romilda Vane, who was hinting heavily she would like to go to Slughorn's Christmas party with him. As he was ducking toward the drinks table, he walked straight into Ginny, Arnold the Pygmy Puff riding on her shoulder, and Crookshanks meowing hopefully at her heels. "Looking for Ron?" she asked, smirking. "He's over there, the filthy hypocrite." Harry looked into the corner she was indicating. There, in full view of the whole room, stood Ron, wrapped so closely around a lavender brown it was hard to tell whose hands were whose. "It looks like he's eating her face, doesn't it?" said Ginny dispassionately. "But I suppose he's got to refine his technique somehow. Good game, Harry." She patted him on the arm. Harry felt a swooping sensation in his stomach, but then she walked off to help herself to some more butter beer. Crookshanks trotted after her, his yellow eyes fixed upon Arnold. Harry turned away from Ron, who did not look like he would be surfacing soon, just as the portrait hole was closing. With a sinking feeling, he thought he saw a mane of bushy brown hair whipping out of sight. He darted forward, sidestepping Romilda Vane again, and pushed open the portrait of the fat lady. The corridor outside seemed to be deserted. "Hermione?" He found her in the first unlocked classroom he tried. She was sitting on the teacher's desk, alone, except for a small ring of twittering yellow birds circling her head, which she had clearly just conjured out of midair. Harry could not help but admiring her spellwork at a time like this. "Oh, hello, Harry," she said in a brittle voice. "I was just practicing." "Yeah, they're really good," said Harry. He had no idea what to say to her. He was just wondering whether there was any chance that she had not noticed Ron, that she had merely left the room because the party was a little too rowdy, when she said in an unnaturally high-pitched voice, "Ron seems to be enjoying the celebrations." "Does he?" said Harry. "Don't pretend you didn't see him," said Hermione. "He wasn't exactly hiding, it was." The door behind them burst open. To Harry's horror, Ron came in laughing, pulling Lavender by the hand. "Oh," he said, drawing up short at the sight of Harry and Hermione. "Oops," said Lavender, and she backed out of the room, giggling. The door swung shut behind her. There was a horrible swelling, billowing silence. Hermione was staring at Ron, who refused to look at her, but said with an odd mix of bravado and awkwardness, "Hi, Harry. Wondered where you got to." Hermione slid off the desk. The little flock of gold birds continued to twitter in circles around her head, so she looked like a strange, feathery model of the solar system. "You shouldn't leave Lavender waiting outside," she said quietly. "She'll wonder where you've gone." She walked very slowly and erectly toward the door. Harry glanced at Ron, who was looking relieved nothing worse had happened. "Opugno!" came a shriek from the door. Harry spun around to see Hermione pointing her wand at Ron, her expression wild. The little flock of birds were speeding like hail of fat golden bullets toward Ron, who yelped and covered his face with his hands, but the birds attacked, pecking and clawing at every bit of flesh that they could reach. "Get him off me!" he yelled, but with one last look of vindictive fury, Hermione wrenched open the door and disappeared through it. Harry thought he heard a sob before it slammed. And that's the end of chapter 14. And next we'll read chapter 15 called The Unbreakable Vow. Hopefully Ron and Hermione will get their acts together. I hope you like that baby kitten. I love you so much. You're the sweetest kitten ever. Sweet dreams, darling boo.